Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I am your host today, Belinda Ellsworth, and I've got a great guest in store for you, Jeremiah Smith. He is the founder and CEO of Simple Tiger, a boutique digital marketing agency specializing in SEO for software as a service companies. The SEO industry is plagued by smoke and mirrors, black hat techniques, and a lack of transparency, and Jeremiah wants to change that for good. For 12 years, Jeremiah has helped companies like Segment.com, Shopify, NBC, MTV, E-Trade, LG, and Sports Illustrated see significant gains in their search results, organic traffic, and revenue. Wow, it is my pleasure today to welcome Jeremiah to our show.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me, Belinda. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, this is exciting. I think a lot of people do talk about SEO and they don't fully understand it. They think they need it, but you've obviously had some success in this and worked with some really big companies. So I can't wait to dive into this and have you tell us a little bit more about it. So why don't we just begin by filling some of the gaps from your bio. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about your journey.
Sure. No, that sounds great. Yeah. So I think SEO is a funny thing because it's so different than any other type of marketing in that it's kind of a guerrilla, I don't know how to explain it really, a reverse engineering methodology that doesn't really fall into the categories of marketing that you see in so many other types of, you know, methodologies of marketing. So that was one of the first things that really attracted me to it, was that it had this kind of guerrilla aspect to it. And I say guerrilla, when I throw that term around, I'm kind of coining the phrase or using the phrase coined by I think his name was J. Conrad Levinson, the author of Guerrilla Marketing, back in the 70s. And that whole era and that whole book, he really talks a lot about how to basically use guerrilla tactics, guerrilla war tactics in your marketing. So show up with minimal effort in places where your audience is, get their attention and get them to buy from you. And I was just really interested by that kind of terminology. And so when I discovered SEO, I immediately felt like this is probably the epitome of guerrilla marketing in today's parlance. And so I really fell in love with SEO. Really what it entails, in short, is just helping businesses show up in Google for certain keywords that are relevant to their business. And so, I mean, I'm applying it to Google. It applies to any type of search engine, but that's what we do as an agency and what I've spent the past 12 years doing.
Great. So tell us about that sort of 12-year journey, if you will. So you kind of got an interest in it and what experiences maybe that you had and how you came to own a successful company today.
Sure. Yeah. So I started off by, I originally built a website for a client of mine. And after their site got built, they were like, all right, we want it to show up in Google. And I didn't know anything about that or how to make that happen. So that was when I decided to really look into this and discovered this whole underground industry called search engine optimization. And through doing that, I decided, you know what, I can get their site to show up in Google. It's just going to take work. I'm just going to have to do this SEO thing for a little bit, and it'll show up in Google. And so I started working on it, and then it started clicking to me. I was like, wait a second, duh, of course they want to show up in Google, because If I was searching for the product that they sell, I would go to Google and I would look for it. And whoever shows up well there, I'm probably going to choose them, right? I mean, it just made my life easier. And so it really hit me. I was like, holy cow, this is an obvious marketing technique. This is an obvious practice. And so I really kind of got passionate about it and dove deep into studying it, not just kind of like trying to figure it out for a client, but looked at it as, this is genuinely intriguing. I want to learn all about this. And so I dove deep into it and started practicing on this client's website. And within about 6 months, this client had grossed a difference in $2 million in revenue based on the SEO effort that I put in. Because I was able to track, back the clients that we brought in to the efforts that I did back in those days. This was 2007, and was able to really get a good idea of what kind of revenue that produced. My mother was the accountant at this company, so I was able to actually take the clients that I had brought in and see how many dollars they brought us. And I was like, holy cow, I can trace $2 million in revenue back to this effort that I just taught myself how to do over the past 6 months. And so at that point, I mean, like, that may sound like I'm saying a lot about me. I'm obsessive when it comes to stuff. And I was completely obsessed with SEO at the time. I'm talking spent all day at work working on the client site. And then when I would get home, I would spend all night reading stuff, watching videos, tearing apart articles, trying new things on the same client's website. And then I would go back to work and do it again. So I was putting in well over 40 hours a week teaching myself this stuff real time. But I was really just blessed to have the opportunity to teach myself that on the job and learn it for free on the internet so easily.
That is great. So one question that I have for you, which just sort of struck me as you were talking. So in 2007, a lot of this was, I'm not going to say it was new, but it was newer than it is today. And we've got a lot more people doing online marketing and talking about different things online. And of course, we've got the whole social media explosion. And so would you say that it's different now with SEO on, you know, as far as getting that space and getting people? Are people Googling as much as they've ever been Googling? And is it really changed? Has it gotten better? Has it gotten harder to get that traction? Do you notice any differences like since 2007?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So much has changed since 2007. The game has changed entirely, to be honest. The general ethos and the general idea of SEO is still largely the same. And the general strategy of what works best is still largely the same. But there's so much about SEO that has changed and has evolved. So let's go back real quick to that time. I'll get a little bit into that time and what that entails, but let me just step outside of time for a moment and talk about just search engine optimization in general. So anytime you're optimizing anything so that it can be found more easily, really all you're doing is just kind of organizing it. Right. I mean, you can optimize your house. You can optimize your spice cabinet. You can optimize your, you know, if you still have DVDs, your DVD collection or books on the shelf. So that's really what we're doing when we do SEO. We're just doing it for a website and we're doing it with content on a website. So there's not much of a difference in that regard when you just think about it from an organization standpoint. It's just organizing something. Right. So that applies whether you are Amazon, whether you are the iOS, you know, kind of app store, or Google. There are so many other places too. TripAdvisor, they have their own search engine. So many other sites out there. eBay, they have their own search engine. And there are all these different ways to optimize things for those search results. So just keep that in mind as I talk through this. Now, I zero in on Google because that's been a majority of my work. That is easily over 98% of what I look at and talk about and deal with on a day-to-day basis. So I'm going to talk for probably the rest of the time we're talking about Google. Back in those days, in 2007, really all you needed to do to perform well in Google was look at your top competitors or, you know, search a keyword that you want to show up in Google for and see who ranks well there. And all you got to do is just optimize your site a little bit from a technical perspective. So clean up a few little technical issues on your site, make sure it's running smoothly, and then build a few pages of content around those keywords and resubmit your site to Google, which is something that we used to do back then a lot. And, and in a short period of time, you would start showing up better and better for those keywords. And if you could just do that better than your competition, you would outrank them. Now, that was very elementary, right? The search engine was very young. It had very simple rules. People hadn't gotten crazy with optimizing their sites or anything like that. There was pretty basic technologies and content on the web, so there wasn't really much in regards to diversity or dynamic competition and things like that in those days. And so it was still kind of the Wild West of SEO. Over time, things have changed so dramatically because the search engines have realized that in order for people to continue using them, they have to show good search results. So the results have to be good. They have to be clean. They have to be clear and make sense. And if they're not good search results, you and I are going to quit using Google, right? We're going to go use Bing or right, whatever else, you know? And so the search engines very, very vested interest in quality results because their revenue comes from the ads they display around those good results. So knowing that, Google then had to start making optimizations to their ranking algorithm and the way they crawl and consider websites relevant for certain keywords. And they had to add on all these additional search metrics that validate a site as more relevant for a keyword than your competitor. And eventually they have adopted artificial intelligence in their ranking algorithm to where now the computer of Google, the machine, the mind of Google is thinking for itself and doing its best to automatically assess what kind of result is best for whatever search you're performing. So things have changed so dramatically now to where what we're doing today is almost nothing like what we were doing years ago.
Okay, perfect. Well, that is really great information. So tell me, having your own business now, how's this shaped your lifestyle today?
Yeah, so it's funny because around that same time, 2007, the book The 4-Hour Workweek came out. I'm sure, I'm positive you've heard of that.
Yes.
And everyone on your show and all their friends and family and their dogs. But that book came out and it really caught my attention. I tore through that book very quickly and decided, yep, that's how I want to live my life. That's what I want to do. And it just lended itself really well to SEO, because with search engine optimization, I could not only do very high impact, very powerful, effective things for a website or a company or a client, but I could do that from my laptop, and I could do that from my laptop in Costa Rica. You know what I mean?
Yes,
I do. I started thinking, this will allow me to travel, first of all. This will allow me to do something I really enjoy doing and build a consulting business around. So that's kind of what I did next, was I decided to start Simple Tiger around that time, which is my agency now. But when I started it, I just thought of it as a cool company name for a consultant. And that was, you know, that was me. I was just going to do consulting for companies like this one that I had just done work for. But I quickly went from that to working a full-time job at a full-service digital ad agency, and decided to go in and work for them full-time and see how SEO is done in the major leagues. Now, it wasn't like I just decided to go do that. I got a really good opportunity. They hired me to come work for them. And that was where I worked with some of the clients that you mentioned in my bio there, NBC and MTV, E-Trade, some of those companies. So I actually got to work with those companies and do SEO in the big leagues and see how massive enterprise companies spend $2.5 million on an SEO project instead of just trying to make $2 million on an SEO project, right?
Right.
I got to learn even more about it. And what I found really quickly was what I used to do for that small company and what I'm now doing for this huge company are exactly the same. So I quickly realized, wow, this is a level playing field. Google's rules apply equally to everyone, just like a rising tide raises all ships. And so I got super excited and I thought, man, this can go anywhere. I could do this for anybody. I could do this for tiny companies. I could do this for huge companies, and I can do it all myself. And so that really helped me formalize Simple Tiger into kind of more of an agency model. And instead of working the 4-hour work week, I really dove deep back into just working more and more. I spent a little bit of time there doing consulting work, which took less time for me, and I made pretty good money doing that. But I didn't enjoy it as much because I didn't get to achieve the results on my own or through my agency's own efforts as when I worked in-house doing it. And so I decided to start building a team, and the company started growing, and I was actually able to really start generating these kind of results for my own clients and my own companies. Through doing that, my lifestyle shifted to really putting in a lot of hours doing a whole lot of stuff outside of SEO. And now, day-to-day, I spend probably 50-60% of my time doing SEO, but the other portion is a whole lot of client sales and conversations and administrative logistics, invoicing, things like that, and then working with employees and working with my team and helping them with stuff. So also the financial component of running a business and just making sure that and all the legal aspects are in place. So my job has evolved quite a bit, and I've gotten back to working a good, you know, 40 to 60 hours a week, given the day or given the week.
You know what? I just loved what you shared. A lot of people wouldn't share that. And there's two pieces I'd really like to point out to our listeners there listening. A lot of times people will say, you know, I would really love to own my own business in, like, I'm a really great baker. I love making cupcakes, and I just would love to own a little cupcake shop. And but I just don't know about the risk of going out. Will I like it? Will I be any good? It's scary for me to leave the job I have right now. I'm like, then go get a job in a cupcake shop. Like, why don't you go work in that and learn so much about behind the scenes, what it's like to run one, what it's like to work there, what it's like, you know, in do I really enjoy it? Do I really like it? And yeah. I can't even begin to tell you, I've given that advice to literally hundreds of people. And the number one response is, oh, I could never do that. Like, you want to risk everything, but you're not willing to go work in a cupcake shop, maybe making quite a bit less. But I'm like, you're like getting paid to go to school.
Right, right. Yeah, for me, it was formative. Like, it really helped me a lot because at the very least, it validated a direction that I was headed. So when I went and worked for that ad agency, to be honest, I did not like the big corporate environment, the overarching kind of managerial mm-hmm. aspect. I did not like driving through Atlanta traffic at, you know, to get to work at 9 a.m. and sitting there until 5:30 p.m. and watching my boss walk out only so I could, you know, minimize my YouTube window and walk out. You know, I didn't like that.
Right.
But I put up with it for a little while so that I could learn what I needed to learn there. And I'm always going to be grateful for what I took from there. But what it really did was it validated to me something special about myself, which is that I needed to own my own operation.
Right.
And be able to set my own rules for my lifestyle. And then through doing that, I actually discovered some really interesting stuff. So a couple of things about how our company is built and how we operate and how I operate is we are a remote work environment. What that means is that no one meets together in an office at our company. I have 6 full-time employees, including myself. None of us meet face-to-face in person to do work at all. We are entirely remote. We are a results-only work environment. So what that means is 9 to 5 does not matter to me. I don't care about your availability. I don't care how you do what you do. I don't care when you do what you do or where you do what you do. We have one employee who is constantly calling in from a different country. I don't even know what country he's in right now. And because of that, he gets to enjoy his life while simultaneously giving me his best work. And so what that means is being a results-only work environment, I don't care where you do your work, when you do your work, or how you do your work, as long as I can quantify the business output that I need and you can deliver it. If you can deliver it, I'll pay you for it and the rest is up to you. And so by doing that, I've opened my agency up to a talent pool that is just way stronger than I'd be able to build here in little sleepy Sarasota. And, you know, with people that I would have to like tie to a desk, from 9 to 5 and things like that. Now that's not for everybody, but I pushed really hard for that at the agency that I worked for. And I got a lot of pushback. They basically told me to shut up and they didn't want me to rock the boat too hard. And I realized real quickly that this would be something that a lot of people would want and it would really boost morale and all that. And it would come with its own challenges too, which I could get into if you'd like, but that was a major shift for us. Just, you know, growing, I don't want to say shift, we were built from the ground up with those principles in place. And so it was a major shift for everyone in the company to go from having worked in the previous kind of environment to that kind of environment and overcoming some of the obstacles and then getting used to all the freedoms and the discipline that it requires of you to be able to work in that space yourself.
That is great. So what do you feel that are a couple of your skill sets that have really helped you to build a successful company?
I would say one of them is probably, it's always uncomfortable to try to talk about yourself and brag about yourself, but I've gotten used to people asking me that. And so I've got to find a way to just be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I think I'm a bit of an empath in that I'm really concerned about other people's feelings and what they're experiencing. And I take it seriously and I try to kind of enter any kind of conversation or situation with that already considered. And so I look at things in an attempt to consider other people first. And through doing that, it's allowed me to really bring in strong talent and then give them the proof that I'm going to be here to fight for them on every client call on every effort that they put in, on every piece of work they deliver. I'm standing behind them and I'm supporting them. And so by doing that, I think that's helped me build a really strong team of people who I don't have to worry about taking advantage of me. You know, as an empath, another thing is I'm an optimistic guy and everything. So a lot of people look at someone like that and think, well, people are going to take advantage of you. But really the truth is that's just jerks that take advantage of you. If you're a really good empath and you're really concerned for other people and everything, most people by and large will look at that and appreciate that and respond in kind. And that's my experience. And so I've really enjoyed the benefit of kind of being that way.
Great. So what does working from your happy place mean to you?
Working from my happy place, we've all heard of probably the term flow, and I'm sure you probably used that on the show before. But for me, getting in the flow helps a lot. And I think, you know, when I get into the right type of work, whenever I get in the right, I guess the zone is another way of putting it. And I'm sitting down and I'm really focused on kind of conquering this challenge or taking care of this list of items I know I need to complete or following up with these certain people. I get into the flow. And when I start doing that, before I know it, I'm just happily, like my knee is bouncing because I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I'm like, I'm in it. And I enjoy doing the work. That was hard for me to come by at other jobs. There were some jobs where I enjoyed it, like waiting tables and bartending. It was kind of easy to get in that flow. There are real people standing right there and you know what to get them. It's right here. And it's kind of fun to put it together and talk to them while you do it. So it was easy for me to get in the flow doing that many years ago. But being able to find an industry and build a business that I own that kind of gives me that joy and that passion really allows me to kind of work from a happy place.
Well, that's great. I always love asking that question because it's so different for different people. I mean, it's one of those questions that a lot of people say, I struggled really hard with this question.
Yeah.
So it's just fun. So what advice would you give to others who want to be entrepreneurs?
I think the most important thing is to understand that you're riding a roller coaster. I can't remember. I think it might have actually been Tim Ferriss that mentioned the entrepreneurial roller coaster, and that there's an inevitable up and down to what you're going to experience. And that's part of just being an emotional human being. But you're going to run into scenarios in your business where something makes you really excited and you've got this great idea and then you go to try to work on it and then you find out it's going to be a lot harder to implement than you thought and now it's going to bring you down and it might look like a failure and you kind of have to just go ahead and step through it and not give up and continue looking at the long run. Don't look so far out or plan so far out that you are, farsighted and, mm-hmm. and you stop losing focus on what kind of stuff's right in front of you that you could do right away. Because a lot of good resourceful opportunities pop up when you're paying close attention. I think it was actually the CEO of General Electric, Jack Welch, who said that a good CEO or a good leader is somebody who does not look at it as problems and solutions, because a lot of people think about it as problems and solutions, but as opportunities. And when he said opportunities, I agree with that. It's an opportunity to make a decision and to go a direction with something. Yep. And so if you're looking kind of close and far, you'll see opportunities in the short distance that could really help you achieve your long distance goal. And if you do a little bit of philosophical planning and thinking ahead of time, you can set a schema. You can create a schema for a way that you can think whenever these little opportunities pop up that you're going to be more successful if you follow that schema. And so I think that's another thing that would be good for entrepreneurs to do is kind of figure out what philosophy are they going to follow? And what I mean by that is why are they doing what they do? You know, start with why, like Simon Sinek says, mm-hmm. figure that out. And then that'll help you make so many decisions to help you achieve success as an entrepreneur.
Very good. You know, I've always taught some of my clients, it is like a roller coaster, but instead of having those huge ups and then these huge downs, like emotionally try to think of it more like a caterpillar. It's never going to be even. And I think everybody's wanting some clear, direct path, right? And it's never going to be that way. But if you can somehow level out your emotions to, you're just going to have ups and downs and ups and downs, but not try to have such huge ups that that creates such huge sort of coming down. So
right.
If you can just level those out. And I know for me, that was like one day I was so excited and so happy. And the next day I would be like, oh, this is never going to work. Or I'm so bummed out because this one thing didn't happen. And this has been many, many, many years ago, probably 30 plus years ago. And I remember my husband said at the time, I can't hardly take this. If you can learn to just level this out. So in my brain, I was like, okay. So I just learned to think of it. If it was just a good picture for me. Like, it's never going to be straight, and it's never going to be straight up because you do have to come back down. So I've just always tried to think of it as that sort of caterpillar inching along with my ups, my downs, but try to keep my emotions kind of even keel with it instead of being all over the place. And I have to say that was one of the best things for me in doing this now, having my own business for over 30 years. It's just been very helpful to stay grounded, I guess is a good way to say it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love that. I agree with that. And I think also your emotions are going to cause you to do all kinds of crazy things, make all kinds of crazy decisions, even kind of go against your best interests sometimes, and it just because you're running based on feelings. So one thing that's helped me a lot actually is my brother. He's my partner at Simple Tiger. He thinks a lot differently than I do, comes to things from a different perspective than I do. He tends to be more, I don't want to say pessimistic, but more pragmatic, where I tend to be a little bit more dream world or visionary, so to speak. And it really helps for me to take my big ideas and run them by him. It helps that I'm his brother, and so I don't take his criticism as personally or as painfully as I would somebody else. But because I know where he's coming from, I know what he's going to say before I even ask him. I tend to say yes to things. He tends to say no to things. And it's good. It's a really healthy balance. He would say that it's a healthy balance too, because I tend to push for new ideas and change, where he may want to try to keep things more consistent and the same. So I think another suggestion I'd have for anyone listening who might be entrepreneurial or kind of running an operation, doesn't mean that you necessarily need to have a partner, in your business, but if you could have somebody that you rely on heavily for advice and counsel that is just different from you. And I mean, like, really different, like they tend to say the opposite that you say, and you can really respect their opinion and appreciate their opinion. You can see success and value being produced in their life. Pull them in and say, look, I need you to kind of be my mentor, or my sounding board, or my, you know, my voice of wisdom. Sometimes when I've got these crazy ideas, I need to run stuff by you. And I need you to poke holes in my ideas. I need you to shoot things down before the hard fact of the real world does. And it hurts my bank account. I'd rather you go ahead and shoot it down with your words right now, and I have nothing invested but emotion. Right. And so I found that helps me a whole ton. That keeps me from making some very bad decisions. And that also, you know, we get into a little argument, a little tussle about something. And then before you know it, something really beautiful actually comes out of it. That's a mixture of both of us. And it's well thought out. It's comprehensive. It's positive, but it's also pragmatic, and it ends up working. And so I really recommend everyone have some kind of partner that they can, you know, advisor, someone they can bounce ideas off of like that.
I agree wholeheartedly. It is extremely helpful. I'm that visionary and think really, really big picture. And I like having the people around me that are more detail-minded, that help me think, okay. And most of the time, they'll kind of go with me. But like, it's probably the same thing. They're like, well, how would you execute this? Or what would that look like? And they just help me do those details that sometimes I might not be thinking of. I'm just ready to plow ahead, full steam ahead. And so it's good for me because I got, okay, I do have to think about that, or how are you going to implement that? Like now I learn before I go telling my clients and, you know, the tribe out there that we're doing XYZ, which is what I used to do. And like, I have to check with them first if that's possible with our provider, with the software that we have. Like, can I tell people that you can buy one, get one free? Like, do we even have that availability to do that? Where I used to do that all the time. It's so funny. The better things get, they almost get worse. Like, there used to be things that I could do 15 years ago that we just manipulated ourselves and did. And now with these fancy back offices, sometimes you can't do the things as readily as unless I had an in-house programmer. So it's just kind of funny how that is. But anyway, it's good to have that sounding board for sure. Well, this has been a delightful interview. You've given so much wonderful information and tips and just been extremely great to have on the show. So in close, any new and exciting things that you want to share with us that you're working on? And then please end with telling our listeners how they can find you.
Sure. Yeah. No, I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed myself here too. And I hope I've been able to add some value for your listeners. So I think one thing that we're working on that I'm excited about for 2019 is I'm working on building an SEO course that's going to be taught online. So if you're interested in learning SEO, I'm going to take everything that we do for all of our clients. I'm going to distill it down into an online course and make it very readily available. You can teach yourself through this course in the way that I taught myself by doing. And so I'm going to be teaching that. And then I'm also going to be putting together my own little podcast that talks about how software as a service companies can grow using various different types of marketing. And so it's all about SaaS growth. That's the point of the podcast I'll be putting together. So those are, I think, two big pieces of value that people can look out for. And then, to get in touch with me, or, you know, if you're a growing SaaS company or tech startup and you're looking for some SEO help, I'd love to help you out. So just reach out to us. You can go to simpletiger.com and request a discovery call with myself, or you can shoot me an email, jeremiah@simpletiger.com.
Perfect. Now, when do you think your online course will be completed?
Great question. I'm working on it now, and I'm hoping sometime by the summer it should be done. I shouldn't give myself that long of a time because I know then I'll procrastinate. But hopefully sometime in the spring or summer it'll be ready.
Perfect. And in the meantime, because this is such an important thing, so maybe not necessarily for already a company that would be looking to hire your services, and I know this online course seems like it's really going to fit the bill for just the average person who wants to learn this, but for someone who's thinking about entrepreneurship, thinking about starting a business, they want to get out the gate with, you know, good SEO and getting themselves noticed. Is there like a 1-2-3 pointer that you would give just quickly for any of those just thinking, okay, I got to start somewhere?
Yeah, actually, I have an ebook on our website called The Anatomy of SEO. And if you just Google The Anatomy of SEO, you should be able to find it. But if you go on simpletiger.com and look up Anatomy of SEO, there's an ebook on there where I do give a really good framework for SEO that should contextualize everything and just make it real nice and easy. And then from there, I think it'll be a lot easier for you to just kind of learn it when it comes to action and, mm-hmm. and kind of putting it all into play.
Perfect. Well, thanks, Jeremiah. This has been great. And I'm sure our listeners gleaned a lot of great information. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Belinda.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. And be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.